not sure it could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price, and I'll keep paying. I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready to back down. I'm still mad as hell, and I don't have time to go round and round and round. It's too late to make it right. I probably wouldn't if I could, 'cause I'm mad as hell, can't bring myself to do what it is.
Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Monday, September 10th, 2007 edition of the American Awakening. I am your host, Michael Herzog, and I will be with you for the next 2 hours, and I'll tell you what, I'm excited. We have got a good show today. We have got a good week coming up, because I have none other than John Hanke. And if, for those of you who do not know who John Hanke is the guy that put together the video of the evidence on JFK, and also a video of JFK Jr., the assassination, and also he's got a 18-minute clip on 9/11. So we're going to go into a whole lot of subject matter. You know, I knew when I had him up on my show that I wasn't going to be able to do it in a two-hour show, and after I got to talking to John, I couldn't do it in two-hour shows or three 2-hour shows. So what we're doing today is the subject content is going to be the Bush connection to the JFK murder. Tomorrow will be murder evidence on JFK Jr. Wednesday will be 9/11, why they did it and who is indictable and what can be done about it. Thursday we're going to talk about late breaking news on JFK's murder, a new book by Vincent Bugliosi, David Talbot's recent book Brothers, and the E. Howard Hunt confession. And then Friday we've got John talking about the Holocaust. So this is going to be a really, really interesting week. And I would encourage you folks, again, if you haven't already, call your friends, neighbors, and relatives and have them give a listen, because there's going to be a lot of very interesting information shared on this program this week. And before I bring John up on my on the show here, I'm going to bring him up after the break, but I wanted to make an announcement that I've got some new postings up on my website. All of my postings are going to be, the first week that I put them up, they're going to be in bright red. So if you see anything on there that's red and not blue, that means that they've just been posted recently. That's www.theamericanawakening.org. I have several new postings up there over the past couple of days, and I've got a couple of things on 9/11, a couple of things on bin Laden, a couple of things on the North American Union, so it would be worth a shout, worth a look. And also, speaking of the North American Union, I've ordered some software. I have a video cam that will not hook up to my computer, so I have ordered some software to make it computer compatible, if you will. And once I have that set up, I am going to start something new. I'm going to go out and start interviewing people regarding certain topics in the public arena, and I'm going to be posting them on my website live, or not live, but I mean recorded, and so you can see the results. I am curious to ask non-mainstream questions to mainstream thinking individuals, and I'm going to be posting these on my website so we can see the response of Joe Sixpack, if you will, or Mrs. Sixpack, or the soccer moms and so forth. And it's going to be a new thing I thought about to wake people up. And guess what? I'm not the only one that has to do this. You can do it too. But at any rate, we'll be back in three with my special guest, John Hanke. Look forward to this show. It's going to be great. Stick with me. I'll be right back.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Morning, neighbor.
Hey, shouldn't you be at work?
I am. As a matter of fact, I pulled another all-nighter.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, at least I'm making money 24/7, but I never have to go to work.
So, what do you do?
Not very much at all now. About a month ago, I heard about this website. It's got a funny name. It's DidYouRobBillGates.com.
That is funny.
Yeah, you can earn $1,200 to $12,000 a week starting the very first week.
Oh, is that how you bought that new mower?
Yeah, and the motorcycle I've always wanted, too. You should log on. Find out how you can become financially free.
So, what was that website?
It's www.DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Just wait, I'll go get a pen so I can write that down.
You don't need to write it down. It's easy to remember. DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Yeah, DidYouRobBillGates.com. That is easy.
It's easy, and the money is awesome.
American Awakening coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona on this sunny Monday. Okay, listen, I believe I have John Hankey on the line. John, are you with me?
I am here.
How are
Hello,
you?
Hello, Michael.
Sir?
Yeah, I'm great. How
yes.
are you?
I'm doing fine. Okay, we've got a whole week of all kinds of information to share with the listening audience. John, and I'll tell you what, I've looked forward to this week in anticipation. Because the, as a matter of fact, I've told my listeners to get on the phone and call their friends, neighbors, and relatives and get them on there, because if anybody's a skeptic or anybody, is not awake or, they really want to know what's going on behind the scenes, you're the man.
Well, I'm one of an army of them, let's say.
You're one of an army of them, yeah. No, but today we're going to, I guess we're going to talk about, Bush connection to the JFK murder, right?
Yes, that's the plan.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you the floor and let you take off, and then every once in a while I may just interject what might sound like an intelligent question, or it might not. I don't know.
Well, and when you see me wandering off, you can grab me by the collar and drag me back.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit, just really briefly, about some of the highlights for me of last week when I was on, or a week and a half ago, of which was the listener calls. And the first guy who calls in says, "It's the banks. It's the banks." And I couldn't agree more. I think that that's such an important message. I think that that's hopefully, I hope that that's going to be the central theme of the next 50 years or next 100 years, that people are coming to a realization of who it is, who was behind the Kennedy assassination, who's behind 9/11, who was behind the Holocaust, and so on. The next guy calls in and says, oh, you know, this is an emergency and things are really terrible. And, you know, I spoke with you. We sold our houses in order to be able to devote the resources that we have to fighting this war. I mean, I think that my children are much more in need of me taking up this battle and this information battle, right? And it's an info war, a culture war, than they are in need of inheriting my house. That, the, you know, the world is on fire and people tend to go on about their daily lives, and it's not like, you know, friends and family are not the most important thing that there is. They are. But that people do need to treat this situation like an emergency for the sake of your children and grandchildren. You know, you need to sit and ask the serious question, what can I do, and then do that. And thirdly, and that was the next caller calls in and says, yeah, well, so what are you going to do? And I just wanted to stress, I mean, you were saying that people should call up their friends and family, and, you know, I'm not saying that this program is going to be the be-all and the end-all of anything, but that people can never underestimate the power of the butterfly effect, right? I mean, if people aren't familiar, there's this story that a butterfly flaps its wings in Peking, and that affects weather in the United States. And I think that, you know, if you were a physicist and heavy into meteorology, that you could make that argument persuasively that it's, in fact, true. But what is really true is that somebody went up to Dylan Avery and said, hey, what do you know about 9/11? And Dylan Avery made Loose Change, and there have been 300 million downloads of Loose Change around the world. I heard Avery say that a couple of days ago, I think. But somebody grabbed him, right? Somebody shook his coat and said, hey, did you know this? Somebody went up to Professor Stephen Jones and said, hey, have you seen the collapse of Building 7? And Jones says, no, I haven't. And, you know, this was just a guy who knew Jones, but he didn't know that Jones was going to turn into the guy that he turned into, and the person who told it, Dylan Avery, didn't know that he was going to turn into the person that he turned into, and the guy who showed me the Zapruder film for the first time when I was young and naive and stupid didn't know that the effect that was going to have on me, and the effect that, you know, I would go on to have on other people. So I, you know, just would urge, and in fact, I'm going to take a minute and tell that story, that I think we touched on this last week, that the Pope used to have orgies at the Vatican, Pope Alexander VI. I mean, this is not wild, it's not off the wall, it's totally mainstream. And the Pope signed a papal bull with his seal on it, saying that his daughter, Lucretia Borgia's son, was the Pope's son. And so while there had been accounts by witnesses who were at these orgies who saw the Pope having sex with his daughter, people tended to poo-poo them, including me, and then they turned up this papal bull with his signature saying, well, so either the Pope's lying or everybody's telling the truth. The point is that the Pope flaunted that because he thought that he could, and people in Rome told their neighbors, and their neighbors told their neighbors, and they talked to the merchants who came to town, and the merchants went back and told the rest of Europe. But telling people one to the other and the next, you know, that is what brought down the power, you know, the absolute iron grip of the Vatican over all information in Europe, right? I mean, at the point that the Pope was having these orgies, they could burn you at the stake for having anything written. But the next thing you know, people are building schools, and you have the Reformation, you have the right, where people get religious freedom, you have the Enlightenment, where people get intellectual freedom, and the next thing you know, you have the Age of Revolution, where people are getting political freedom. And all of these stem from the little tiny butterfly effect of one person telling the other. So people absolutely should not underestimate the power that they have by talking to from one person to the next. And this is the last thing I'm going to say on this point, which is that you hear me on the radio, or I hear some, you know, brilliant, not to put me in the same category, I don't consider myself brilliant, but you hear somebody who really, you know, they're on the ball, they got their stuff, and they tell you the story, and you hear it, and you go, wow, man, that's really terrific, that's really powerful. But then you're supposed to turn around and repeat that, and how are you going to do that? And suppose you were at a lecture, and the guy has slides, and he's got video, and he's got pictures, and he's got, you know, all of this photographic evidence of memos that have been written by this guy and that guy, and how do you go out and repeat that to your neighbor? But now we have DVDs, so that you can go next door to your neighbor, to your brother-in-law, and you can repeat it. This weekend, I was sitting at a party at my family, and, you know, the Two young guys come walking in, and I had told one of them about my DVDs, and for the first time in a year, I remembered, and I brought it, and we sat there and talked for 2 hours about 9/11, right? I don't think that you can underestimate the importance of that. And now that you have DVDs that you can walk into the person's living room and reproduce the lecture that you heard, it's just astonishing. That's the hope that there is for the world. But so let's get into.
I want to make a point about that before we do get into.
Please. Sure.
The fact of the matter is, you know, I was looking, as I do, I peruse online and I go do my research and whatever, and I ran across the stopthenau.org, and a guy put together a nice video on the North American Union. And what's interesting is that if this is going to be stopped at all, and by the way, I believe there's 19 states now that are enacting legislation to kick out the North American Union. If this is going to be stopped at all, the mainstream media isn't going to help us. If we want people to find out about JFK too, if we want them to find out about 9/11, if we want them to find out about the North American Union, it's going to be us that does it. And I want to interject just a little bit more into your point, John. It's like, you know, when you say, you know, the butterfly effect in one person, this guy didn't know what you'd be doing, you know, 10, 15, 20 years after the fact. It's the same thing with me. If you'd asked me 2 years ago if you'd have told me 2 years ago that I'd be sitting behind a microphone talking to people and going out in public and making waves in a political activism capacity, I would have told you you were nuts. But what happens is there's a fire that's lit within certain individuals, and we don't know who those individuals are. And this is the point that I want to make, and it's just what before you came on the show, I had mentioned to my listening audience that as soon as I have the software for my camera to be able to download video into my computer, I'm going out and I'm going to start doing interviews with mainstream soccer moms, mainstream Joe Sixpack, and I'm going to start asking them pertinent questions that are not reported mainstream to get their reactions, and I'm going to start posting them on my website, and it's going to do two things. It's going to show you either how dumbed down or how awake the American public is, but it's also going to awaken the American public because I'm going to be out there talking to them about it, and it's also going to build my listening audience because I'm going to give them a business card and let them listen to my show. So it's three birds with one stone. But at any rate, my point is that if we're going to do this thing, it's a joint effort between all of us. We cannot rely on the mainstream media to do it, and we have to get up and do it ourselves. And your point about the videos, John, is an excellent point because now you don't have to be able to repeat anything. All you have to do is hand them a video and let them watch it.
Right. And also, here we go.
All right.
Here we go. What is so we're going to talk about my video. Right, and I mean that I made with this in mind. Right, I teach. I have 120 students every year, and so every year 120 people get to see, you know, my version and get exposed to all of this stuff and get to ask questions on their own and hopefully learn some of the techniques of questioning and investigating. But I wasn't satisfied with that anymore, and I wanted to try to make something, create something that would allow everybody who looked at it to have the same experience that my students have. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this DVD and encourage people to get it, bushkilledjfk.com, and they can get it at your website as well. Is that right?
Yes, you're right up on my website. And,
okay, very good.
All they've got to do is they've got to look up John Hankey on Former Guests, and your website's right underneath there. All I have to do is click on it.
I was just talking to your engineer, and he was telling me how he lives in Central Texas. And one of my favorite parts of this video, and I make a point of it, is I grew up in Los Angeles, in East Los Angeles, in an environment, and especially with the Kennedy assassination, I was taught to frown, to look down my nose at people in Texas as being racist and ignorant and violent and carrying some sort of culpability for the murder of John Kennedy. And in this video, and, you know, I've looked at hundreds of hours of video on the Kennedy assassination. I was seeing this for the first time, and it really, really struck me. After Kennedy was shot, you see hundreds of people running to the grassy knoll and then running up the stairs of the grassy knoll. And I'd like to know what state in the Union it is that when shots get fired, you have people running towards where the shots came from in order to catch the culpable individuals instead of running away.
Let me stop. We've got to go to a break. All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in three. Michael Herzog of the American Awakening with my guest, John Hankey. Stick with us. Got more.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
It is through the use of ritual that evil gets power. What do you think those people do at Bohemian Grove? It is ritual. They gather and perform ritual with evil intent. The more vile the ritual, the greater the evil that comes from it. This is done to spread their evil influence and control over our lives. Legend has it that the Knights Templar found the Holy Grail, and it was this that made them so powerful. Can we really believe they found the Holy Grail in their dig at the Temple of Solomon? What they most likely found was the occult knowledge of the greatest magician of all, Solomon. This is what turned the Templars from monks into masons. We, ordinary people, can use these same principles and empower ourselves to obtain protection and favors. The Bible is loaded with examples of how ritual was used by prophet and angel. Ritual prayer is an effective way of getting results. We can use it to bring positive results to one's family, community, and even nation. For more information and ordering on the book, The Power of Ritual Prayer, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner. Call 215-500-2972.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
We're back. Michael Herzog of the American Awakening coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona with my guest John Hankey. And we're talking about the JFK assassination. And you had mentioned, John, that when is it that you had ever seen a bunch of people running in the direction of bullets or in the direction of a murder? Go ahead. You got the floor.
Well, so that the people of Texas, I mean, have to be really, and Dallas in particular on that afternoon, have to have hats taken off towards them for their courage. I mean, whatever criticisms you might direct at them, they certainly on that particular afternoon demonstrated outrageous and pervasive courage, charging in the direction that the shots had been fired in order to try to get their hands on the person at the grassy knoll who had fired them. That's one of the things in the videotape. Another unusual thing in my video is you see Kennedy's press secretary pointing to, this is in the hospital, Parkland Memorial Hospital, immediately after the shooting, and the doctors have just pronounced Kennedy dead, and the press secretary, Malcolm Kilduff, comes out and he points to his right temple and says, bullet through the head, pointing to his right temple, which is where the shot from the grassy knoll hit Kennedy, and clearly a bullet that hit Kennedy in his right temple was not fired from, that hit him in the right temple and blew out and went through his head and blew out the back, was not fired from the grassy knoll. 100% of the Dallas doctors you get to see in that video of the doctors who were in the emergency room described Kennedy having a huge exit wound in the back of the head, and they all, show you, right? And that's also in the videotape. The New York Times, on the day that Kennedy was murdered, had an extradition came out that said that Kennedy had entrance wounds on his throat and head and a large exit wound in the back. Now, let me roll on just a little bit. The other thing that, and the major point that I wanted to make today, or in the introduction, is that the video also has just overwhelming evidence that the body was stolen. This guy, David Lifton, is the investigator. I want to give credit to him. Went and he interviewed Aubrey Reich, who was in the Dallas hospital. His job was he worked for a mortuary. And there's no argument. He's the guy who wrapped Kennedy up, and he's interviewed by David Lifton, who says that he wrapped him in sheets and put him in a bronze ceremonial casket that Mrs. Kennedy had taken out. And then I believe it was Jimmy Carter ordered all of the people at Bethesda who were associated with this, he ordered them to tell the truth, and they had been ordered to keep silent. And Carter reversed that order and told people to talk. And Lifton went and he interviewed Paul O'Neill, who was the technician at Bethesda that there's no argument about, but right among the government sources, the government would verify that he was the guy who removed Kennedy's body from the coffin. But he says that Kennedy, he opened up a pinkish-gray shipping casket and pulled out a gray body bag. And the question is, how did Kennedy's body get from the bronze ceremonial casket into a pinkish-gray shipping container? And then you have, and Lifton is also the guy who uncovered all of this, you have an FBI memo from the FBI agents at the scene, at the autopsy, who said that when Kennedy's body came wheeled in, it was obvious that surgery had been performed to the head area. In my video, JFK2, you also get to see a photograph that has been leaked, but it's been leaked in many, many areas and in reprinted by several reputable sources, showing this the surgery, which is to the right temple, which is to the entrance wound of right that was inflicted from the grassy knoll that entered in his right temple and blew out the back of his head. And then you also, and this is probably, my video is probably the only place you can easily get it, is one of the Dallas doctors, Nova, right, the PBS program, did a really hatchet job, a pseudo-scientific presentation on the Kennedy assassination. But they flew the Dallas doctors in to Washington to go to the National Archives and look at the photographs that were taken in Bethesda just before the autopsy started in order to say whether or not the body had been altered. Well, Nova then misrepresents what the doctor said, but this slipped through, and it came in and was in this Nova program that one of the doctors points to the right temple. You get to see it very dramatically. He points very clearly and obviously to the right temple and says, well, yes, the skin here has been cut and has been ripped back in order to open up this wound, in order to try to make the entrance wound on the right side of Kennedy's head look like an exit wound instead of an entrance wound. And I say all of that in order to get the little kids off the street in this discussion of who it was who was behind Kennedy's murder. The mafia did not have the power to do that. The mafia did not have the power to call the Secret Service agents off, and they certainly didn't have the power to steal the body and alter the wounds. The Russians didn't have the power to do it. The Cubans didn't have the power. It was certainly the military that was involved in that particular aspect. But the question is, and, when I was young and first looking at this, you're confronted with this huge conspiracy, and how can you account for it? And you write the media conspiracy, the New York Times presenting the truth and then burying it, and the military and the Secret Service and the FBI and on, all of these people who had a very large hand in this murder. Well, what organization could possibly draw those all together? And I have to admit that I learned all of this first when I was 20. I was about 25. I read about the Council on Foreign Relations. And I said, well, okay, there it is. There's the conspiracy. The Council on Foreign Relations is a conspiracy that brings together the owners of the media, the military-industrial complex, right, all of these, the major people are brought together. And, they could be brought together at the Bohemian Grove, or they could be brought together at the Bilderbergers, and they all, get brought together in those different places, but it's the same people. But that was the first time that I got an idea of how you could put together such a conspiracy, which was so obviously huge. Well, so, right, the point was to get the little kids off the street, to get the sort of side stories, oh, the mafia did it, and so on. And so we'll take up the Bushes in just one second. I wanted to start with the Bush's Nazi background. So when we come
all right,
back...
We're going to stop. We've got to go to a break.
Right. When we come back.
When we get back. Right. When we get back, I'm going to take a caller. I haven't opened up the phone lines yet, but I'm going to go to Malcolm in Chicago when I get back from the break. Stick with us. Then we're going to go back into the Bush Connection. See you in three.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Pinch me, Bill. I can't believe it. A few months ago, I couldn't even afford gas for my car. And here we are with season tickets on the 50-yard line.
I know what you mean, John. I remember the day you saw my new car and asked me if I robbed Bill Gates. Our lives sure have changed since we discovered DidYouRobBillGates.com.
I was struggling to make ends meet. Now I've got a new car and a college fund for Lisa when she graduates from high school next year. And I owe it all to you because you told me about DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Hey, John, we all win when the money problems disappear. I want to tell everybody because the more people we have on the success team, the better it works. It's hard for the little guy these days. We pool our resources to level the playing field.
So the more people that go to www.DidYouRobBillGates.com, the more cash for everybody. What a concept.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permanent hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
All right, we're back. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. Long segment coming up here. All right, before I go back, and before we continue with this, John, I haven't opened up the phone lines yet, nor did I intend to do so until after the top of the next hour, but we've got a caller, so I'm going to go ahead and take Malcolm in Chicago. Malcolm, you're on with Michael. Go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate this very much. It's a pleasure being on here with you guys. Listen, John Hinckley, I'm a researcher also. And I have done some research on Kennedy, too. And I like a lot of your work. A lot of your work is correct. But there is something I haven't seen you or any other researcher doing the JFK assassination yet to be able to point out. Now, for you to understand what I want to explain to you, I'm going to have to give you some homework. And then I will call back later on in the week and talk to you about it, okay? So I need you. What I need you to do is look up the Chicago Daily newspaper of November 22nd, 1963. The headline:
And while you're at it, look up the newspaper, the New York Times, and the Chicago Sun-Times of November 22nd, 1963. But the main paper I need you to look at is the Chicago Daily Newspaper of November 22nd. And like I said, when you get that, I'll call back later on in the week, and then I'll discuss with you. If you don't already see it by the time when you look at it, if you ain't got what I've already picked up, I'm going to explain to you what is on that paper that
a
lot of
people just
missed.
Do you know where I can get access to it?
How you can get access?
Yes.
I think the library would have archives of the newspapers, of the old newspapers, Chicago Daily News.
You can't send it to Michael, huh? Get a copy of it and send it to Michael.
I could.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Why don't you either email it? Can you email it to me?
I could try. I just need to scan it and then email it or something.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Because
well,
you know, the chances of me getting to the library before the end of the week.
You have to understand, and I'm sure you'd probably do that. We are so busy. I mean, I used to go to the library all the time when I was researching the IRS until the computer came along. Now that I've got a computer, there's no way that I could take time out of my day to go down to a library to look something up for a guy to call me back in later. No offense against you. It's all due respect.
I understand.
But we can't do that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and I've needed to go to the library for the last 4 months, and I haven't managed to get there yet. I need to get John Kennedy Jr.'s magazines and go through all of them looking for a particular article.
Well, what I could do, because I had that in mind too, I could mail it to you. See, the reason, I want to explain it to you, but the reason I can't explain it to you, because if I explain it to you, it's hard for you to visualize it and see it. You have to actually see it yourself to really understand. You have to actually see the dates, the time, and everything that I want to present to you in just a couple of minutes if I call back. But I can mail it to you, yeah. I could do that. I just didn't know how long it would take, but I could do that, yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, you want to mail it to John or mail it to me?
I could do it to both. I think it'd be better if both of you get it.
Okay.
I just hope nothing happens to it since I've mentioned. Go into my website,
Malcolm, www.theamericanawakening.org, and right on the home page you'll see the address, the mailing address.
Okay.
Well, if you can scan it and email it, that would be better, but do what you can do.
I will.
All right. Thank you, Malcolm. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
Okay. All right. Yeah, John, let's get back to where we were here. I don't want to get too off topic.
Sure. Well, I wanted to talk about, and later in the week we're going to talk about the Holocaust and the fact that the Holocaust had its origins in the United States, and in fact the sort of vicious racism responsible for the Holocaust has its origins in the United States. And I think that Americans tend to and rightly consider ourselves, you know, free-spirited and open-minded, but we also tend to underestimate the viciousness of the racism that has existed in America's past. And mm-hmm. the Bush family comes from a family of slave owners, just for example. But in the early 1900s in this country, you know, immigration is an excitable issue among people very often today. But in the 1900s, the Bushes and the Harrimans and the DuPonts and the Rockefellers were pushing racist restrictions. I mean, they were preaching racism against the people that they wanted to keep out of the country, and they were doing it very, very overtly, and that is to say that they said that these people were inferior and that was the reason that they were racially inferior and that was the reason that we should keep them out. But the people that they were talking about were the Italians and the Irish and the Jews and the Chinese. But my point is that there is a very, very old and vicious history to the people who currently rule the United States, and the Bushes, the president's grandfather, are very, very much a part of that. Prescott Bush, and so that's the introduction, is Prescott Bush is the president's grandfather, and he was the CEO, the chief executive officer of Union Bank of New York, and in 1942, Union Bank of New York was seized as a Nazi asset by the United States government. The United States government went in, J. Edgar Hoover investigated, and discovered that this was a bank that Hoover and Harriman were fronting for that in fact belonged to Fritz Thyssen. Now, Fritz Thyssen is not just any banker. Fritz Thyssen is the most important banker in the Nazi movement. And there's a couple of points that I'd like to make in the video, and one is that Prescott Prescott was very, very, very well connected. He could have gotten a job working for any number of different banks, so that he chose to work for a Nazi bank, and he didn't. You know, there are also, if you've seen Schindler's List, there were Nazi businessmen who weren't very sincere about their racism or their Nazism, but who were just trying to do business. Fritz Thyssen was not one of those. Fritz Thyssen was a very, very hardcore, and from the beginning and in the most important and crucial parts, an innovator in the development and creation and support and success of the Nazi Party. So that I'd like people to, and the Rockefellers as well, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on that today, but the Rockefellers and the Harrimans and the DuPonts were all absolutely crucial in the roles that they played in making Hitler possible. And these guys didn't lose World War II. I mean, they were rooting for the Nazis in the sense that the Germans were defeated. You could say that they lost World War II. They didn't get everything that they wanted out of World War II, although these people made $1 trillion off of the Holocaust because they were able to keep the bank deposits of the Jews who were murdered during the Holocaust, but they weren't imprisoned, their armies weren't destroyed, and when they came back to the United States, they came back to the most powerful country on earth and a government in which they were very, very much in power. And Eisenhower tried to warn us against these same individuals. Eisenhower called them the military-industrial complex, and these are the people who killed John Kennedy. Okay, and so now we're going to talk about the very specific connections. That's a more generalized connection about who it is who killed Kennedy and that they were Nazis and why. The Bush family, their main connection is to the main perpetrator, and the main perpetrator that is on the scene in Dealey Plaza, the most important, is E. Howard Hunt. I'm not sure whether E. Howard Hunt had a gun in his hand that day. I suspect he may have been the guy shooting from the grassy knoll, but it doesn't matter. He was, and as we'll see in a second, it's established that he was a supervisor of people who did have guns in their hands. And so we're going to talk about Hunt, and then we're going to establish all of the connections between the Bush family and E. Howard Hunt. Hunt happens to have confessed, sort of, and I would put that in quotes. Hunt is one of the great liars in the history of the world, and so I reject anything that's in his confession as being acceptable just because he said it. But in fact, he did say that he was invited to participate in the assassination. He says that he didn't. I don't believe that. I believe, and we'll see. So anyhow, there is, back in the 1970s, the Congress was investigating Watergate, and they were really, you know, they were throwing their weight around. They felt very much empowered. They felt that Nixon was on the ropes, and the CIA, who was involved in the Watergate affair, was on the ropes, and they were opening up investigations into assassinations generally and into the Kennedy assassination specifically. And during that probe by both House and Senate committees, there surfaced a CIA memo, and the memo was from, it was either from Angleton to Richard Helms. Helms was director, or it was from Helms to Angleton, who was the chief of operations. And the memo said that Hunt was in Dallas the day that Kennedy was murdered, and that he was involved in the assassination. And it said, and this is going to come out in the Senate investigation, and what are we going to do about it? What are we going to say when it comes out? Now, Bush was made head of the CIA, and he started threatening all of the people involved, and they shut down all of these investigations. And it's my observation that one of the people on the staff of the Senate committee that got a hold of this memo leaked it to several news media, but two papers published it. One of them was Spotlight Magazine. Spotlight Magazine published the memo, and then after Bush came in and started shutting everything down, setting people up, carrying on stings. Anyhow, the CIA and Hunt were again feeling their oats, feeling like they're on the rise and that they can start throwing their weight around, and they sued Spotlight Magazine for slander, and they lost. Hunt had on the stand, and then through the course of history up until that point, had given five different explanations of where he was on the day that Kennedy was murdered, and four of them had to be a lie. So, I mean, it was very, very demonstrable that he had lied at least four times. And then he had his fifth story, and the story that he says was now the true one was also, during the trial, exposed as a very, very obvious lie. During that trial, Marita Lorenz, they put Richard Helms on the stand. They called Richard Helms to testify, Helms, the head of CIA, who said that Marita Lorenz was an agent working for them and that she had been involved in attempts to assassinate Castro, that she did work for their Operation 40. And then they put Marita Lorenz on the stand, who confirmed everything that Helms had said about her. And then she said that she was working for Operation 40, and Frank Sturgis, who was her, you know, like her sergeant, right? He was like a non-commissioned officer. He was the lowest level, but the closest supervisor said, pack your bags, we're going on a trip. And two station wagons pull up full of guns and money, and I'm sorry, men and money, and they pile in and they all drive, and she doesn't know where they're going, and they end up pulling into Dallas, and they go into a motel, and they're sitting in the room, and E. Howard Hunt comes in and starts passing out maps and money. And she immediately saw that the operation was going to take place in Dallas, that they were not going to be killing Cubans as she had been doing as a CIA-paid terrorist in Operation 40, that they were going to be killing Americans on American soil. And she said, I'm not having anything to do with this. And she got a ride to the airport, and she flew home. She says Sturgis returned a couple of days later and said, you should have been there. You missed the big one. We killed the president. So she says all of this on the stand during the trial, and the jury found, and they had to find, right, that the preponderance of the evidence, that at least 51% of the evidence to 49, showed that E. Howard Hunt was in Dallas and participated in the assassination. They had to find that in order to find the magazine guilty, and that's what the newspaper found. So Hunt is at the center of this connection to the Bushes, and Hunt, the connections between Bush and Hunt, George H.W. Bush, are just overwhelming, and I'm worried that we're going to run out of time, but I'm just going to start into them. And the first one...
Wait a minute.
Sure.
How much time do you need? We got 4 minutes till the break. So, are you talking about the whole time during the today, or the whole time during the till the break?
I'd need about another 10 minutes, but we'll get started into it. That's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Not a problem.
All right.
The first connection, and on the stand, E. Howard Hunt testifies that he at the end of World War II, he was working for Averell Harriman. Now, if you're a serious researcher, that should keep you busy for the next couple of months investigating what the heck it was that Averell Harriman was doing, that he needed this CIA-trained killer working for him as his press agent. But the point that I want to make is that when Prescott Bush was working for Union Bank, I said this, but I'm sure it got by your listeners, he was doing it on the payroll of Averell Harriman. Averell Harriman was signing the check, so that Averell Harriman, E. Howard Hunt, and Prescott Bush both answered directly on a daily basis to Averell Harriman. And the chances that they never ran into each other, I think, are probably close to zero, given the very, very close relationship between Hunt and Harriman. And, I mean, Wright Hunt testified that he met daily with Harriman, and certainly Bush did the same thing. In any case, it's a very extraordinary and interesting connection. In any case... all of this stuff comes together even more clearly during Watergate. Hunt was the head of the Watergate burglars. If you read any of the books written by any of the participants in Watergate, and they're all very, very interesting reading, Ehrlichman and Haldeman, Nixon's two top advisors, and John Dean and so on, have written, I think, fairly honest stories about things as they were going on, and all of them say that when Hunt got busted, they found out that Hunt had an office in the White House, and nobody could figure out how the heck this guy got an office in the White House. They were unable to find anybody who knew E. Howard Hunt or who was connected. Nobody in the Nixon administration was connected to the CIA. There was one guy who was vaguely connected to CIA investigation. Right, the CIA has two arms. One is the genuine intelligence gathering, which is what was authorized by Harry Truman when he signed the Intelligence Act. But the other arm is the operations arm, which wasn't authorized and has never been authorized and rarely is authorized. Certainly, they did virtually everything that the operations end did under Kennedy was done without Kennedy's authorization. The murder of Diem and the invasion of Cuba, the Bay of Pigs. They asked Kennedy for permission to do the Bay of Pigs, and Kennedy said no. I mean, and this is all documented anyway. The only person in the White House who had any connection to CIA operations was George Bush. And George Bush was the Nixon's ambassador to the United Nations. He wasn't supposed to have a White House office, but he insisted on having a White House office, and he is the connection he's the only connection that there is of anybody in the White House to CIA operations. And as we'll see, and I suppose people know that he was formerly the head of the CIA, but it, even at that time, we were able to establish that there were lots and lots of powerful connections. Well, let's just run on into it. What's also very clear, and Hunt said so on the stand, is that he was a supervisor at the Bay of Pigs, and what's also very clear is that he was answering to George Bush, that George Bush was a low-level supervisor at the Bay of Pigs, which I want to emphasize, meaning that he was very, very hands-on, that he knew the various individuals who were involved in the Bay of Pigs operation, one of whom was E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis and the rest of the Watergate burglars. All of those guys at Watergate were people who would have been supervised by Bush, given his position. Now, Bush claims that he was never in the CIA or affiliated with the CIA until he was made director of the CIA, and nobody finds that a particularly persuasive story in when it was told the first time. I mean, why would what was his background that would make him qualified to supervise the CIA?
I was going to just interject here and ask, why would somebody be made head director of the CIA if they had no experience, weren't affiliated with the CIA, and didn't know anything about them? That just doesn't even make any sense.
And made the head of the CIA so that they could get rid of Colby, who was cooperating with all of these committees. Colby right. was working very, very carefully and closely with the Senate. Colby was an honest guy.
Right. We got to go to a break. I find it curious. Yeah, because Colby was cooperating. They put Bush in there because they knew he wouldn't cooperate. We'll be back at 3. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my guest, John Hankey. It's going to get better, folks. Stick with us.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Hi, friends. Bill Bagley from Vital Basics, and I want to send you a bottle of the best-selling supplement Focus Factor absolutely free. Why would we give away a free bottle of Focus Factor? Because we know that if you try it, you'll buy it. Focus Factor has nutrients that work with your natural brain chemistry to support your memory, concentration, and focus. People all over the country say it's the best brain support supplement they've ever tried. Well, how would you like to try Focus Factor yourself absolutely free? No, we're not crazy. We're confident. Because once you try Focus Factor, you'll wonder how you ever got along without it. And that's why, for a limited time, we'll give you a full-size bottle of Focus Factor, an $85 value, free. You simply provide $4.95 to help cover the cost of shipping and handling. Call now for your free bottle of Focus Factor. Call 1-800-518-3796. That's 1-800-518-3796. Limit one bottle per household, please. Again, the number is 1-800-518-3796.
The Berkeleyte's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeleyte, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeleyte is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeleyte, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Thank you.
We're back. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. Short segment coming up to the top of the hour. My guest, John Hankey, talking about the JFK assassination and the Bush connection. And I want to remind everybody, John's website is bushkilledjfk.com. I would implore you, I would really urge you folks to go in there, get a copy of these videos, get one of each. Have a party. Invite your friends, neighbors, and relatives over, because the connections are George H.W. Bush, his son is in office right now. Okay, they party with the Clintons. Hillary Clinton's running for office. I mean, all of this stuff is connected, and John Hankey has given you a plethora of information. Obviously, you can't absorb it all, but that's what these videos are for. It's to wake up your neighbors, folks. So please, if you would, go into bushkilledjfk.com, order a video. All right, back to you, John. Short segment coming up. Go ahead and continue.
Well, we're going to drop a bombshell at the beginning of the short segment, but so the centerpiece of the information connecting Bush to the assassination, besides his myriad connections to Hunt, and we didn't even touch on all of those, but is a memo written by J. Edgar Hoover 5 days after the assassination of John Kennedy. The title of the memo is Assassination of John Kennedy, and it's a very interesting little memo. The title is Assassination of John Kennedy, and then it talks about these, what Hoover calls CIA misguided anti-Castro Cubans. And it's interesting that there's this book that's just come out, Brothers, which is about Robert Kennedy. It's really, really a very well-documented book. And it says that Robert Kennedy was persuaded that it was these misguided CIA anti-Castro Cubans who had been involved in the murder of his brother. The guy who wrote the book, David Talbot, goes through and he interviews the lead investigator and many of the members of the Senate investigation, and all of them said, well, if there was one area that we would go after, they concluded that, and that this was the congressional, the finding of this congressional investigation was that Kennedy had been murdered by a conspiracy, and if they had more time and more funding, they would have gone down the road of investigating these misguided CIA anti-Castro Cubans and their role in the assassination. Anyhow, that's what the memo is about. There's every reason to think that J. Edgar Hoover, and remind me that that's the area that we should go into, that every reason to think that Hoover was aware of this, and that when he is saying that the title of the memo is Assassination of President Kennedy, and when he's talking about misguided anti-Castro Cubans, he knows that he's talking about one of the teams of assassins that was involved in the murder of John Kennedy. And so he wants to give a report to the CIA about his investigation. And so he calls in two representatives of the CIA who obviously are connected to these misguided anti-Castro Cubans. You call in the supervisors when you want to give a report about the activity of a particular group, right? You don't give it to somebody who's not connected. And he names George Bush as the CIA, George Bush of the CIA, are his exact words, Mr. George Bush of the CIA, as the representative to whom the FBI gives the report about their investigation of the misguided CIA anti-Castro Cubans. And but then in the memo it says that they did the investigation and they found out that the Cubans were all very brokenhearted about Kennedy's murder, which is just a transparent lie. But I mean, that's what Hoover was going to say in a memo that was liable to fall into the hands of the public, which it did. On the other hand, if he had said anything more than that we would not have it today. The memo would have been destroyed. So that by creating it the way that he did, he created something that would survive for us that links George Bush to the assassination, written by the most important law enforcement officer in the history of America.
All right, let me stop you there. We're going to go up to the top of the hour break here, and then we'll come back. We've got more. We're going to talk about J. Edgar Hoover a little bit as well. We're going to open up the phone line, so stick with the second hour coming up. We've got a lot of good stuff going here, and it's even going to get better, folks. So we'll be back in 2 minutes. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special and very knowledgeable guest, John Hankey. We'll be right back. Stick with us.
It's too late to make it right.